Okay, go ahead.
Well, hello everyone, and thank you so much for having me. I am always humbled by requests to qualify and very grateful. I am distinctly of the mind that the witness that we bear by listening to one another's stories and telling our stories and being heard are a distinct aspect of what has brought me. I had 3 years of sobriety on October 9th and this year, and the last time I checked, I was down 128 pounds. I'm humbled also because I'm relatively new to program, and I know that there are many fellows here and everywhere that have been in program for much longer. I lost my brother about 14 months ago now, I think, or maybe a little more, and he died. We used to call it morbidly obese, but now I understand it's metabolic syndrome, which is, diabetes and all those other things. And he and I are genetically cut from the same cloth, and we were close. And I spoke with him a couple of times a week. We saw one another, and the last 6 years of his life was a miserable spiral downward until he finally gave up the ghost. And I knew that if I didn't do something, that it would also be my story. And so I was inspired actually by his suffering to choose health, because I was definitely on death's door at 329 pounds, eating whatever I wanted, whenever I wanted, and as much as I wanted. I realized that the behavior that I was in was meeting a need. And I think we all know that addiction is so baffling, because in fact, you think that you're going to gain some comfort from whatever the substance is that we choose. And the truth is that the outcome is actually the opposite of that, that I was remarkably uncomfortable. Was filled with self-loathing. I was always disgusted looking in the mirror. I stopped caring about myself. Literally, I threw the towel in on myself. And I was trying to, I combined, of course, my involvement in the 12-step program with other modalities. It's not, I don't rely just on the program, but I use it as a tool. And I am a meditator. I have a different meditation buddy every day of the week. Then we get together on Zoom and we're friends for half an hour, and we sit in silence for half an hour. This really helps me. I also take that meditation practice into my eating, so that, I mean, so much of that 329 pounds was because I didn't even notice what I was shoveling down my in my mouth. And so now I actually try to do meditative eating. I notice the food in my mouth before I start to chew it. I notice flavor and texture. I'm actually present with the chewing. I'm still trying to break the habit. I don't know about you, but when I eat, it's sort of like you put in a mouthful of food, and then already my fork is looking to get the next one, and I haven't even swallowed the first one yet. So I am not in the present moment. I'm in the bottle. I was, and I still am, in the bottom of the bowl. It's sort of like, how do you slow this down and notice what I'm taking in? Because I know that that distinctly has been a very, very important part of my recovery. So, what got me to 329 pounds? My parents and my older siblings, I'm from Malta, I'm an immigrant, and I was just in New York and I went back to Ellis Island. I hadn't been there in 71 and a half years. And it was deeply moving to think that, being from Malta during World War II, the Nazis bombed us constantly for about 4 years. My family were running to bomb shelters two, three times a day, facing annihilation, in fact. And so they all came out of that, thank heaven. And but I was raised by people with PTSD, and all my older siblings, undiagnosed and untreated PTSD. We immigrated to Toronto, and I was only about 6 months old, and before I was 1 year old, a drunken driver killed my oldest sister. We hadn't been in the land of opportunity for a year when this, remarkable tragedy occurred. And so, then the household was in grief, devastated, full of remorse. And I was breastfeeding. My mother was breastfeeding me, and I have a therapist, and I'm not every week, but I see him regularly. And when I started to see him when I entered program, because I wanted feedback on what all was going on and what the connections were, because I knew they were there. I know the literature says it doesn't matter why, but for me it does. And he told me something that really stuck with me. And he said that often food disorders start when we are pre-verbal. So I took a look at what was my family circumstances when I was a baby. And so raised by, surrounded by people with PTSD, undiagnosed, untreated, and then this remarkable grief, devastated. And recently I just came across this term. I'm 72. Benign neglect. It wasn't that somebody was trying to neglect me or there was abuse going on. It's just that my home was not a place for a child. It was full of grief, and people were completely distracted. And it's not their fault. And it's not my fault either, So that happened. I was about five when my father's early onset Alzheimer's started to show. It was full blown when I was nine, and he didn't know who I was when I was 14. So, I learned very early on that to use food as a comfort and as a way to not feel, to numb my feelings. And of course, I was in an immigrant family. So, my mother spent all day cooking in the, the kitchen. And my father worked really hard to put the food on the table. So if I didn't clean my plate, if I didn't eat everything on the plate, they took it personally. So in order to please my parents, and then it was like, oh my God, he wants seconds. He's such a good eater. And, it was sort of like food. I mean, these were people that starved during the war. My mother tells stories that, dinner would be two eggs fried up between six people. Once food returned, it was a celebration and an indication of victory, And of course, you know, this is sort of the underpinnings of this compulsive overeating, this habitual eating. I think it was my 69th, it was my 69th birthday, and I just saw my brother suffering, and I really felt like I needed help. I needed real help. And I had a friend who had a lot of success in this program, and I thought I need to find a meeting, and I did. And I've been going to it ever since. I go to two meetings regularly, and I'm in a 12-step study group now with two other gay men of color. And we've really found community and are able to support one another as we move through. This is my third time through the steps. You know, I also this so yeah, so the food was meeting a need, and it was sort of like how I was so involved with shame, you know, that I needed to find a better way to meet the need, you know. Because I was, you know, killing myself. Sure felt that way. And, you know, food was for me a shortcut. You know, it was if I was feeling angry, if I was feeling lonely, if I was feeling, oh my God, it took care of everything. You know, every feeling that I had. But, you know, real healing, there's no shortcuts in real healing. And you can. You know, if you've got a wound, you can put a band-aid on it, but if it's infected, you have to go underneath that band-aid and really clean it out in order to really heal. So, you know, the fellowship in so many ways, you here this evening, your presence, the invitation to join you. I was just at a meeting earlier. This fellowship has been everything. I'm very fond of a quote by bell hooks where she says, rarely, if ever, are any of us healed in isolation. Healing is an act of communion. And while the 12-step program has really, really brought that home for me. So, where am I now? I think I've mentioned I go to several meetings a week. I have a food plan. I have what I refer to as my God squad. It's a handful of people that I speak to on a regular basis. The consistency of their knowing my program and knowing my story. And me knowing theirs really contributes to this ongoing sense of support, which is why, you know, none of the diets, the Atkins, and the God knows what that I did before worked, because there was no ongoing support. And that's what I have now at meetings just like this one. And I'm very, very grateful. I do a 10th step every night and write up what I ate. I count calories. I mean, I just feel like I have to include the science of all of this. Without counting calories, I'm not really cognizant of all that I have taken in. And if I'm not aware of all that I have taken in, then I'm back to where I was. Because I didn't pay attention to the cal. I wasn't looking at the labels. I was just, you know, looking at the bottom of the potato chip bag or the Häagen-Dazs container, whatever. Yeah, so it helps me to write up and add up what I've taken in. Then it's like, okay, wow, I try to stick to about 1600 calories a day. And I must say, that a lot of people find that it is hard work. This is very hard work. This process of self-discovery, of lifestyle change. And simultaneously, I have to say that I have been overwhelmed with joy. When I first came into the rooms and I got a sponsor and I was doing a food plan and whatever, I was losing 2 pounds a week. I couldn't believe it. At 329 pounds, I was convinced I could not lose 10. And I'm down 128. So, there was this momentum, of course, and whatever they call it, the pink zone or something, when you first start to lose weight and all that other stuff. And my sponsor told me, and I'm experiencing it now. It's sort of like, it's not about the food. And once the weight is off, then you start to learn what it's really about. And I'm very, very grateful that I'm in this maintenance place, and I've been sustaining it for months and months now. I also made so many great friends. I just went to New York, and one of the meetings that I attend is out of New York, and I met with a lot of fellows. I was asked to speak at a meeting there, and it's just a, I retired when I was 70, and I had this I had already come into program, but it was sort of like there was a lot of empty space in my life. Suddenly, I wasn't working 40 hours a week and or more. And I was invited onto boards, and all of, and I just said no to everything. It was just sort of like, I am not filling my life with stuff in the same way that I am not filling my stomach with stuff. I just wanted to sit in the quiet and experience it for the first time in 70 years. It was a very, very, very new experience. And the quiet also allowed me to see how I was using work and or other things. And now that I've been retired for a couple of years, it's sort of like, wow. So much about what was happening was all my way of dealing with stress. Just like the little boy, would run to the fridge and deal with stress. And I am sort of one of the fortunate ones because I didn't start to gain weight until I was about 35. So as a child, my metabolism was such that, all of the food they put in front of me, I gobbled down, and it didn't really show. But as an adult, when I got older, things started happening. So I have chronic arthritis in both of my knees. And at 329 pounds, there were times where I couldn't walk. It was just so painful, and cortisone shots in the knees on a regular basis. I had inflamed bursitis in my shoulder. It also ached, and this pain all contributed to horrible sleep syndromes. I had a terrible rash underneath my belly. That's all gone, and I didn't know until I came into the rooms that fat triggers histamines. I was taking an antihistamine every morning and every night because I couldn't breathe, And so I'm not doing that. The bursitis is gone. My knees are managed. Infrequently, there's a little flare up and a little ibuprofen, and I'm good. Most of the time, I do nothing and I don't need to do anything about it.
That's 20.
Thank you. Sugar causes inflammation, of course. And sugar is also addictive, and I was doing a lot of it. In the same way that as a child, I was experiencing trauma after trauma after trauma. What brought me into the rooms was, 4 years of the previous administration felt like civil rights that I'd worked on all of my life were being chipped away at. Then COVID hit. Many of my close friends are African American, and then the Black Lives Matter movement came. And then here in California, the smoke from the fires in Oregon came, and the sky was literally charcoal gray with plumes of red behind it. So it was, trauma after trauma after trauma. And I lost more than the weight. I lost desperation, and I lost my addiction to sugar. It doesn't call me anymore. I don't have to have huge portions and seconds, sometimes thirds, in order to feel gratified. Aside from all of the physical discomfort that I was carrying, I lost my self-loathing. I really care about myself. And one of the ways that I knew that I had to care about myself was to take care of that little boy that didn't get the attention that he needed as a child, that was surrounded by a remarkably stressful and grieving family. And it just occurred to me to take a picture and make a photo of him. And so now I take naps with him, and I tell him all the things that he needed to hear way back in the day. And I do it regularly. I place this little the little my little boy, where I can see him every day, so that I have an ongoing relationship with him. And I get to tell him it's not your fault, and I get to tell him that not to worry, that things are going to be okay. Then I've got your back, and I'm never gonna turn my back on you. I'm gonna always be there for you. And these are the things that together have combined to get me to a place where, I've always been kind of a optimist and kind of a happy guy, but the level of authenticity in that contentment now is, especially without the distraction of work, is I'm feeling more genuine than I have ever felt in my life. And also the level of gratitude that I feel. I mean, I was always grateful. I mean, I grew up poor, and so whatever it is, it was always good to see, and I was grateful to have. But overall, now that I have actually given myself good health, it just has meant so much, and I'm so very grateful for that. And I'm really grateful for your attention. I thank you very much. I heal by telling my story, and I pray that there might be a nugget in there that will be of some value to your healing process.
That's 1 minute.
I look forward to hearing your stories as well. So, thank you.